We're learning about the labor history of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The federal holiday is celebrated on the third Monday of January each year to honor the birthday of the civil rights leader.
But our next guest says many people forget that Dr. King wasn't just an activist for racial equality. His legacy includes fighting for workers' rights.
Will Jones is with us to give us the forgotten history of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He's a professor of history at UW-Madison and the author of The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights. Will, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of times on this holiday, we tend to think mainly of the civil rights strand of Dr. King's work, but here's a clip from the last speech he gave while he was alive.
You are demanding that this city will respect the dignity of labor.
And Dr. King saw that, as he saw it, history, civil rights, and labor were bound up together. They were intertwined. And that's something that I think often gets overlooked when we look back. What is that history of labor and civil rights?
Well, it's true. You know, as you point out, that was his last speech, and perhaps that's his best-known labor speech. He gave that when he was in Memphis, Tennessee, supporting a strike by sanitation workers, who were fighting for the right to have collective bargaining rights. But what's interesting, I think, is that that was actually the end of a very long relationship that Martin Luther King had with the labor movement. Going back to the beginning of his activism in the 1950s, when he emerged as the leader of and the spokesman for the Montgomery bus boycott, which was a sort of classic civil rights struggle, but some of the most important supporters of that struggle were labor unions, and they remained his really consistent and steadfast supporters, both in terms of raising money and gaining national attention and also supporting him legislatively and politically. So he saw the labor movement as a really critical ally to the civil rights movement.
How did King's pro-labor work support his civil rights work?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, in one way, it was a sort of a strategic alliance, particularly in the 1960s. The labor movement in the United States was really at the peak of its power. It had money, it had political influence, and perhaps most importantly, it had a predominantly white membership. And if you look at demonstrations, the March on Washington, pictures of the March on Washington, of most civil rights act demonstrations, most of the white faces are there because of unions, because of their participation in the labor movement. And so it provided a bridge and a very important ally. But that wasn't the only thing that Dr. King saw in the labor movement. He saw that African Americans, as he said, were predominantly a working people. They were, in many cases, the most vulnerable workers. And so for Dr. King, labor was also a really important vehicle for African American economic justice. And in his view, it was really impossible to work toward racial equality in a legal sense or a political sense without also coupling that with economic justice. And so that's the sort of two ways in which he saw labor as a really important ally to the movement.
Now, Martin Luther King Jr. Day became a holiday largely due to the work of unions, at least initially. That was the story as it began to gain traction. How were they instrumental in creating this day that's now a national holiday?
Right. That's something that's really fascinating to me. And I didn't know that until I was doing research in some of the unions that were supporting, including AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which was the union. It was actually founded here in Madison, Wisconsin in the 1930s. And by the 1960s, it was the largest union of public employees in the country. In 1968, Martin Luther King went to Memphis to support a strike that was coordinated by AFSCME. It was a local of AFSCME of sanitation workers. And he was assassinated when he was supporting that strike. And so for AFSCME, that became a very symbolic moment in which they saw, in some ways, King died for their own struggle. And it was AFSCME and a number of unions that initially took up this cause to turn Dr. King's birthday into a national holiday. It was first introduced by John Conyers, who was himself had roots in the labor movement. He represented the Detroit area. His father had been a union activist. And he introduced this bill, but it really kind of languished for over a decade. It was introduced first in 1969. It would not become a law until the 1980s. And it was really the unions that sustained that struggle, interestingly, by often including it in contract negotiations. So they would include the holiday as a contract negotiation, sometimes as a strike negotiation, as a demand in strikes. And this was not just AFSCME, it was the United Auto Workers Union, the Distributed Use Workers Union, the teachers unions, both the American Federation of Teachers and the NEA, sort of integrated this into their own collective bargaining demands. And by the mid-1970s, it was in some ways a de facto holiday for many unions that because they had won it as a contract demand.
Back in the late 60s or the 70s, when some of this push in unions was going on for this holiday, were there more African Americans involved in unions, or was it still a partnership that was outliving King in terms of marrying civil rights and labor?
Well, African Americans have been involved in organized labor since there were unions in the country. This became particularly important after the 1960s when African Americans when civil rights activists passed laws prohibiting discrimination by unions. So unions that had previously excluded African Americans started to welcome African Americans in. And so by the late 1960s, we get a situation that actually continues today, which is that African Americans of all racial groups are the ones that are most likely to join unions. And that's still true today, largely, I think, reflecting the condition that Dr. King focused on, the fact that they are predominantly a working people, and also the most vulnerable workers. So they're the ones who need the union movement in many ways more than anyone else.
And did Dr. King make a difference for workers' rights in the United States as he made a difference with civil rights?
Well, he did very much. I mean, that strike that he called for, that he went to support in Memphis in 1968, after his death, and in some ways because of the sort of the national attention that his assassination called to that struggle, the workers in Memphis won collective bargaining rights. They won the right to have a union and have that union negotiate on their demands, on their behalf. And as a result, AFSCME actually and the public employee union movement grew very rapidly in that period of the 1970s, in large part due to the sort of to the moral status that Dr. King called to it in that period, and also to its alliance with the struggle for civil rights.
Eventually, Martin Luther King Jr. Day was signed into law by a Republican president and had corporate sponsorship. It sounds like Coca-Cola and Miller to help drive it home. How did that change happen after being mostly a labor movement?
Right. I mean, it's a fascinating story. It was President Ronald Reagan, who was in many ways a really staunch opponent of labor unions, particularly the public employee unions that had sort of taken this on as their cause. In some ways, that was a result of the success of the campaign. It was sort of an outgrowth of the fact that the campaign in some ways got so big and got so legitimized. I mean, by the time it was signed into a national law, it was an official holiday in many cities because the teachers, because the public employees, the city employees, in some states even, had already gotten that written into their contracts. So the state sort of had to shut down on that day. It was also part of a really concerted effort by the King family and the King Center in Atlanta to promote the holiday to the corporate world, to sort of get these corporate sponsors. And they were largely successful in that, I think largely because of the groundwork that had been done by unions in the previous decade.
It's interesting, though, because now when we observe the holiday, the labor aspect of it, it seems like it's largely vanished.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that in some ways, Coca-Cola, Miller Corporation, they have a lot more resources to do publicity. They can print calendars and send them out to schools in a way that the union movement really doesn't have that type of those types of resources to maintain their presence. I think a lot of people, particularly within the union movement, I think people maintain that memory and they remember the origins of the holiday. But it has been lost, I think, largely in the public consciousness.
Do you think the King Foundation and those carrying on his legacy today, family members and others, is there any interest in de-emphasizing the labor aspect of it and building on instead the civil rights aspect?
Well, I think some within the civil rights movement, there continues to be, and in some ways there's always been a question as to whether these are, the two go hand in hand all the time, and there's been some disagreement over that. And so I think, in some ways, I think that there has been, from some, an effort to de-emphasize it. I think at the same time, however, I think the King Center has often emphasized things like workers' rights, economic justice, as part of its campaign to dignify and to remember and memorialize Dr. King.
You said there was some disagreement about whether they went hand in hand. What is the crux of that? What are people saying?
Well, I mean, from the very beginning, there's been a tension within organized labor. There have been unions that have actively excluded and prohibited African Americans from joining the union movement. And so for, you know, deep in the history of organized labor, there's divide over the question of racial equality. And on the flip side, many in the civil rights movement, some have said, well, you know, unions are never going to welcome us into their fold, and we're never going to be equal. White workers are never going to be allies. So that's a strategic debate, I think, that has existed within the movement from its very beginning.
Do you think that Dr. King would want to be remembered as a labor leader today, given his immense achievements in the civil rights arena, or would he see them as bound up together?
I think there's no doubt that he saw the civil rights and labor as essential allies, and the union movement as one that was really critical to the success of the struggle for racial equality. He pointed over and over again to the significance of unions, not just for African Americans, but also for creating a just society, an egalitarian society. And he always maintained that the union movement was, as he said, the principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress.
We're talking right now with history professor Will Jones from UW-Madison about Dr. King's forgotten labor history.
And you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts or connections on the ties between America's labor history and America's civil rights history and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s role in both of those? What kind comes to your mind on this holiday? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post at the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our discussion with history professor and author Will Jones, talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What part of Dr. King's legacy comes to your mind on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day? And what do you think of as his most important work? What do you think King would say about the state of labor today? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we go to our callers now. We have Lynn joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Good afternoon. I am a nearly 60-year-old white woman who was raised in a suburb on the south side of Chicago. And in my house, Dr. King was a union hero. I mean, he was assassinated marching with brothers. My own great-grandfather was a union martyr. And I think if Dr. King would see the state of the workers today, he would not be happy. We've taken a huge step back. And in my house, union rights are civil rights.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call, Lynn. Appreciate your point of view. Lynn comes from a family that cares about labor rights, as Dr. King did, and she sees that connection. Do you think that is something that the people like Lynn do remember to this day?
Yeah, I think that's a great comment. I mean, I think it's an illustration of something I said earlier about the way in which this legacy of of Dr. King's connection to the union movement has been remembered and sustained within the union movement itself, even as it's been lost, I think, and forgotten to the broader society. So I think there's lots of families like Lynn's that that are, you know, white families in rural areas of the country who maintain a connection to the civil rights movement through that labor connection. And I think it's very powerful.
Now, the topic of right-to-work legislation has come up recently in Wisconsin. It's been a topic across the country. I understand this legislation was already in play when Dr. King was alive. What did he have to say about it?
Well, he was pretty clear in his opposition to right-to-work. He called it a false slogan. He said it robs workers of its civil rights and of its jobs rights, and it doesn't, in a sense, give you any rights on the job at work. He pointed to right-to-work states having lower wages and weaker civil rights laws. And so he was very clear in opposing right to work. I think it's important to keep in mind that it wasn't simply a sort of narrow policy position, but he believed that that workers needed unions to protect them from exploitation and abuse on the job. And so he believed that any law that was going to weaken organized labor would be one that was not in the interests of any workers, black or white.
Dr. King also said it's hard to imagine creating racial equality without having an economically egalitarian society. And, of course, today we still have huge wealth gaps in the United States. How do you think today's society measures up with Dr. King's idea of what an equal society economically looks like?
Right. I think this is another thing that Lynn actually pointed to. I think, you know, in some ways, the progress that we've made on civil rights since Dr. King's life has largely been around legal victories for sort of treating people equally regardless of racial differences. I think he would look to today and see that we've actually come, we've moved backwards significantly in terms of economic justice. The gap between the rich and the poor has widened. And Dr. King saw that as something, I think, wrong in two respects. One was that he had a very sort of a Christian critique of inequality in society. He thought that that capitalism, if left unregulated, led to an inhumane social system that would in a sense, create poverty and keep people in poverty, regardless of how hard they worked and what kinds of skills they had. So that would, I think, bother him greatly that we've become less equal since his lifetime. I think he also saw that as long as there was competition between white and black workers, there was a sort of declining size of the pie, that black workers were always going to lose out in that struggle. And so he saw as the most vulnerable people, African Americans, particularly victimized by economic inequality.
So do you think that he saw working on the problem of civil rights from an economics angle to be the most powerful tool he had to work on that?
Well, I think he always placed a really high priority on racial equality before the law. So I don't think I think he would actually argue that the two went hand in hand, and you could never really prioritize one over the other, that you were never going to reach racial equality without economic justice, but you were never going to achieve economic justice without racial equality.
And you said he was critical of capitalism.
He was extremely critical of capitalism. I mean, he spoke repeatedly about the way in which capitalism creates poverty. He said it was a system that ensured that people had to live in poverty. And he saw that as an immoral and an unjust system.
Had he gone so far as to consider other systems?
He did. He called for, and he spoke very explicitly about this late in his life, that he called for democratic socialism. He was also very critical of communism. He said that communism ignored the individual, that it was an unjust and an undemocratic system. So he was very clear that whatever moved forward had to happen democratically. But he did not believe that a society should sort of allow the market and market forces to run unruled.
Let's go back to our phones now. Andrew is joining us from Appleton. Andrew, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you could speak about Dr. King's theological background and the connection between labor and civil rights that might have come out of some of his theology.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Andrew. Will?
That's a great question, and I think there's two answers to that. One was the way in which he pointed to the great tradition, the religious traditions that were predominant in the United States, both Protestant and Catholicism and Judaism, all having a very strong labor component to their theology of speaking to the rights of workers and condemning economic and social inequality. So in that sense, he sort of saw organized labor and support for economic justice as growing out of the great ecumenical traditions that he tried to mobilize in support for civil rights. As I mentioned earlier, he also saw the sort of unregulated forces of capitalism as undermining the moral basis of society. And so he had a theological basis for his support for organized labor.
Andrew, thank you for that call. And to take us up to the present, there's been a lot of unrest in the United States over the past several months, tied to several shootings of black men by white police officers, beginning with Ferguson, Missouri. How do you think, to put that into context, how do those protests and the Black Lives Matter message fit into the civil rights legacy of Dr. King?
Well, I think they fit very, very tightly in a number of ways. I mean, obviously, we're talking about inequalities based upon the treatment of people based upon their race before the law. I think a central criticism of the Black Lives Matter movement has been the treatment of African Americans in a different way because of their race. The issue of police brutality is an issue that has been at the center of civil rights organizing really throughout the 20th century and into the 21st century. In King's day, the issues of incidents of police brutality were really at the center, both in northern cities. Beatings of police, beatings of African Americans, mostly young African American men in situations that were almost identical to the situations that we're seeing touch off these protests today. This was also coupled with the collaboration of law enforcement in the suppression of civil rights activists in the South. And so Dr. King always called on for federal intervention to ensure equal treatment by the police.
His daughter, Bernice King, spoke today, and she said, "We've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go." What do you think Dr. King would make of where we are today?
Right. Well, I think he would share that perception. And again, I think a central thing that he would point to is the growing economic inequality in our society and the way in which that's related reinforces both the perception that African Americans are different, the sort of perception of racial difference, and the perception that it's legitimate to treat people differently based upon their race. And so the way in which economic injustice and inequality reinforces racial injustice and inequality. And I think he would be alarmed at the way in which, in some ways, we've moved backwards along those measures.
Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Will Jones, professor of history at UW-Madison and the author of The March on Washington: Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights.